viewed by Renee Derelict for Concord's Oral History Program. The interview is taking place at his home at 76 Sorrel Road on January 19, 1993. Mr. Alexander is 62 years old. It is a pleasure to be able to add someone with your very long years of service to the police department, to the oral history program, but what is even nicer is your long familiarity with the town, having grown up here and so close to your present home. What do you remember about growing up in Concord around here?
Well, it was a pleasant town to grow up in. It was mostly a rural town back then. In my youth, there was a lot of farms. This, in fact, my house that we're living in right here was on a farm in my youth. I lived across the street from it. Down at the bottom of the hill on Wright Road, there was a piggery. This is off of Lawsbrook Road. This farm land that I'm living on now was owned by Ed Christopherson in Acton, just over the town line in Acton. And there was an asparagus field in the early part of the year, and then pumpkins or corn later in the year. And most young people in this town worked on farms as they grew up. Either Tom McGrath's, Kenny Farms, Wheeler Farm out on 9 Acre Corner. One of the farms, most of the young people in this area of town. And the place where most people went and associated with was the town of Maiden. There was a bus line between the two towns, and it was easier for people from West Concord to go to Maiden than go to Concord Center.
Because there was certainly a separation physically.
Physically, between. Concord mm-hmm. Center and West Concord in those days. West Concord was primarily, it was the Allen Chair Company, which was a manufacturer of furniture, and where is now Bradford Furniture. There was the Concord Woodworking Company that was on Damon Street behind the present post office in West Concord. Dover Ski Binding Company, and these were industries, and the Garnett Mill, which was a woolen facility that is where the leather shop is presently housed.
And your father worked for the reformatory?
The reformatory, and I later lived in what they called the White Row prison homes, prison houses where guards and their families lived. This is on Commonwealth Avenue between the railroad tracks and the Rotary Circle.
So guards and their families were an integral part of the town.
A very integral part mm-hmm. of the community back in the day. There were in West Concord, there was all of Commonwealth Avenue, even the houses that weren't the prison row houses, housed guards and their families. And over on Elm Street, in the area of Assabet Avenue and Elm Place, and across from the state police barracks were all prison houses also with guards and their families. But these were all duplex houses, so each house had two families in it. And there was generally a lot of children in these homes, 4, 5, 6 children in a home. So it was a little community in itself.
So you had your first introduction to law enforcement through your father's
work. Through my father's work.
And you went to Concord High School?
Concord High School, graduated in 1949. I went to 1 year Boston University and completed the year there. And then I left to go in the Air Force. While I was in the Air Force, I got married. When I was discharged, I had 3 children. And I came out 4 years later, and about 6 months after being discharged, I went on the Concord Police Department in 1955.
Growing up, though, would you say your life centered around school, sports?
School, sports, church, mm-hmm. religion, family. This was a town that you grew up in. Your friends, you stayed with your friends, you stayed within the town. You didn't go other than up to Maine to see a movie at the People's Theater or the Colonial Theater. There was no transportation. Oh, you're going to Boston to see the Red Sox, Boston Braves back then, they were still playing.
But people didn't move around a lot today.
It was a very family-oriented community. People knew each other. There was the people that were long-time residents of the town. Most people lived here long periods of time, and everybody knew everybody.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when I come on the police department, there was still probably between 7,500 and 8,000 people living in the town.
I see.
And it started to grow rapidly after that period.
And which church were you a member of?
Our Lady's Church in West Connecticut. And that, during the summer months, they provided an athletic outlet. They had baseball teams, and during the winter months, they had both St. Bernard's and Our Lady's had basketball teams, CYO basketball and baseball teams, that most of the young people, it didn't matter whether they went to other churches or not, they played on the teams, no matter what church they went to.
When you joined the police department, was it common for members of the force to also be living in town?
Joined the police department, everybody lived in town. It was a requirement. You had to live in town. They didn't consider you unless you lived in town or you moved into town within a very short period of being hired. I think I went on the Bill Costello, who later became chief of police, came on the department 3 months before I did. He came on in April of 55. I came on in May of 55. And he moved to Concord from Abington. And after he got on the job, he lived on Nancy Road in Concord, but he moved here from Abington and brought his family to Concord so he could stay on the police department. Sometime later, I would say probably around 1965 or 70, they changed this requirement and made it so that you had to live within 15 miles of the town. And now this is the present rule. There are very few young men on the department who live in town. I think there's probably four or five at max. Most of them come from other towns.
So that's a big change.
A big change.
Can you describe the police department in size and when you joined?
When I joined, there was a chief, one lieutenant, and I think two sergeants, and the rest were patrolmen. There was a total of 17 men on the department. We were in the present town hall on the Bedford Street side across from the St. Bernard's Church. There was a side entrance to the building. And we had the main front office, one little office to the side, and the chief had a private office. It was three rooms and a cell block with three cells.
So
down into the thing. And there was a garage out behind the building that at one time housed an ambulance. And when I come on, this is where the Middlesex Mutual Insurance building is now. It was between Joseph D's funeral home and the present town hall. And this was used for storage after I came on the police department, but prior to that, it had been a garage for the town ambulance. The ambulance was later turned over to the fire department, and to the present day, it still is there.
So you're saying the actual cells were in the townhouse?
In the townhouse, mm-hmm. In the basement of the townhouse.
Oh, my goodness.
The courthouse was up in the present hearing room of the town hall. And that was the courthouse. It was, as you go up the stairs, you go down, take a right at the top of the stairway, you go down the hallway. The clerk of court's office was on the right. The probation officer was on the left. Selectman's office was where it is today, on the left-hand side as you come up, go down the hallway, and you go into the main hearing room of the town hall. It was the main courtroom. On the back left-hand corner was a smaller second session courtroom, and on the up at the far end of the courtroom was the judge's chambers. And there was the prison, the The judge's bench was on the Bedford Street side of the town hall, and during the warmer months, there was no air conditioning in the building. Mm-hmm. The windows would be open, and traffic going by outside would get so noisy that you'd have to shut the windows in the courtroom. Could be sweltering during hot summer months.
What a dramatic change.
The different change. Very, very much of a difference. We moved into the, even after we moved into the new police station in 1962, the court was still there. I don't think we moved into the present court until around 1968, down on Walden Street. That was finally completed in 1968 or 69.
Well, Connie Lawrence, a former town clerk, was telling me that in the basement was also a firing range.
Yes, we did. We had a firing range in the basement of the town hall where we used to go and train. It was quite an antiquated range. It was built by the police department. It went from the, I would say probably ran from east to west in the town hall in the basement, and it was what they call a 1,000-inch range with a height of 25 yards. And you had cranks to roll the targets back, and there was a backstop down at the end with sand to contain the bullets. And we'd be downstairs shooting, and people would be upstairs town hall. And we were only allowed to use 22 caliber bullets down there, nothing heavier, so there was not much threat of any damage to anybody being hurt.
Well, that's certainly, I know when people will listen to this, they will find that incredible. Were there a lot of street patrol?
We had, during that day, we only, during that time period, up until probably 1968, we only had two cruisers on the police department. Most of our patrol was done by foot. We had three walking beats, one in West Concord, one in Concord Center, and one then what is we call Thoreau Street or the depot area of town. And these would be covered by foot from, the depot area would be covered from 8 at night till 5 in the morning. West Concord would be covered 24 hours a day by a foot patrol, and Concord Center would be covered 24 hours a day by a foot patrol.
Hmm.
And the man who was patrolling these, there were call boxes, he had to call into the police station. And prior to radios coming on the police department, the call box was located on the corner of Walden and Main Street in front of by Snow's Pharmacy. And upstairs over Snow's Pharmacy was a telephone office where the telephone operator was, before we had the present day dial system, there was a switchboard for the telephone operator. And during the evenings at times, we wouldn't have anybody in the police station from 1 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock in the morning, and the telephone operator would take calls and turn a light on outside. So we'd see it and we'd go to the light and she'd tell us where our calls were.
I see. So she operated around the clock.
She operated around the clock. And the telephone operator that used to do it was Tara D, and her husband Phil D is still alive. Tara's passed away, and Phil D, he still lives in town. He's since been married again. But, his family, his son Phil, daughter Judy, Jada, and Virginia. In fact, we lived next door to him growing up on Commonwealth Avenue. He was also a prison guy.
Mm-hmm. Were the type of crime that one had to deal with when you first joined different than today?
They were no different. There were the same types of crimes. There was burglaries, which is breaking into somebody's home and taking property.
Has that increased, though?
It's increased over the years, mainly because the town has grown and there are more people in town. But percentage-wise, it's probably about the same today as it was then. The youth crimes, juvenile crime, was not nearly as prevalent then as it is today. Most things, at that time period, people didn't call the police department. They called the parents, talked to the parents about things. Today, when young people do things immediately, they get on the phone and call the police department. With crimes that are reported today wouldn't have been reported, and they're probably, kids were probably doing the same thing, but they didn't get reported.
Do you think that's a reflection of, you know, neighbor really not knowing neighbor, or
probably in the fact
different?
That most people in Concord had relationships. There was a lot of extended families, the D's, the Finans, the Finnegans, my own family, the Alexanders. There were a lot of extended families in the town, and everybody knew everybody else. And this is the way the town was then. Most towns were. If you want to see similar towns today, you can go up through Westminster, Ashby. They have band concerts on the common during the summer. And they're very similar to Concord when I was growing up.
So all this would be taken care of before it escalated to...
Very seldom mm-hmm. we would get to the police department. When it did, mm-hmm. they would try to settle it in the same way that the families mm-hmm. would, without a prosecution, a court, or making a crime out of it.
Mm-hmm. You particularly became interested in being a juvenile police officer.
Yeah, I have been very active with youth throughout my career in youth sports, baseball, youth football, and youth hockey. And I've been active in Boy Scouting in the town with my own children. And becoming a youth officer was kind of a natural outgrowth of this. I was very interested in it, and I became very interested in drugs during the 1960s, seeing what was happening in the drug situation. It became quite scary and frightening to me, so not only to me, but to all police officers and citizens of the town, of the country at the time. The LSD was very prevalent. Dr. Timothy Leary was in his heyday at Harvard University, and we seemed to run into a lot of problems with students from Harvard University being involved with drugs and stuff coming out into the town and the wooded areas, and we'd run into them. And I made it my business to learn and know about drugs, going to drug training schools from the Drug Enforcement Agency and within the state. And I eventually became the youth officer and the drug liaison officer with the school department in the town, working with the school department and up through the present-day townwide drug council is still in force in the town. And we did receive a grant from the Attorney General's office for $25,000 to drug education during when Marion Schwann was with the school department. We applied for the grant and received it.
Is this during the 1970s?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. No, it was 1980, I believe, mm-hmm. the early 1980s. I think I gave you the newspaper clipping on that, didn't
I? Yeah. This is under the Dukakis.
Dukakis administration, mm-hmm. yeah.
The drug problem, you're saying, was like twofold. There were people coming in from the outside as well as internal.
People, and mm-hmm. it started becoming internal. Concord was no different from any other town, and young people saw it happening and became involved with the early drugs of choice were LSD and marijuana, and then it became amphetamine and marijuana. At one time we had heroin. Now, today it's cocaine, marijuana. Marijuana seems to be one of the constants that stays with the drug scene all the time, all the way through it. And as we went along, in the early part of this, the department would react to situations and do something as it happened and react to it. As we grew and learned, we became a proactive police department, and most police departments do today. We had officers going out into the community in different areas, youth, drug education, rape prevention, home invasions, home burglaries, crime prevention, safety officers going out and working with the schools, and school bus safety, bicycle safety. The department's changed their whole philosophy of working from a reactive situation to a proactive situation. And this is still going on today. Even more so in the short time that I've been retired, I can see it happening.
As a juvenile officer, you automatically become an advocate of the young person.
You have to be an advocate of the young person. There are times when people overreact to juvenile crime, and if you did what they wanted, they'd have every kid incarcerated and put away. It's just not possible. And even within the police departments, the juvenile officer had problems with his decisions and would have to stand up to a lot of officers and say, this is the way it's going to be. I'm the juvenile officer. This is how I'm handling it. And some officers didn't like it, but the chief stood behind the juvenile officer and the courts did, and we were able to make it work.
That's good, because it's not easy to go against the grain of colleague.
They had some pet names for his romper room, diaper dicks, and different things, but it was all good fun and friendliness. It wasn't vicious.
No, in the end, of course, they're glad that you're there. Is there more publicity about crime today?
I think there is a lot of publicity, some of it undue from the media. They seem to think that people have to know that it's happening, and they print it in the papers, and we get a lot of people reading about it, young people especially, they read about it, and they become kind of copycats.
Mm-hmm.
They see that something's happening someplace else, so maybe we should do it here. And I think this is prevalent through advertising, the alcohol industry advertising. They make beer drinking seem like it's you can't go out and climb a telephone pole without drinking a beer, you can't go skiing, or you can't go swimming without being on the beach and having a Coors or a Bud or something in your hand. And this contributes to the problem. And we're an open society, a free society, and I don't know how it's going to stop, but it does contribute to the problem, there's no question about it.
Well, out of necessity, then, the police logs that are available to even the local newspapers have to be sanitized to some extent.
They're sanitized to some extent only to that information that is privileged to protect names and of people like juveniles or women who are victims of sex crime, people who are witnesses to a crime and call in and give their name. We can sanitize these names to protect them. We can't. Anybody who is arrested, even a juvenile, has to be entered into the daily log. It's a matter of law. And this name goes in there. The juvenile's name we can sanitize and keep out of the log because it's a privileged communication. The a person who is a victim of a sex crime, we can keep their names out of the log, or any known identifiers out of the law as a matter of law, so that they are protected from the media and the general public, so that their names don't become known. These are things. It varies from newspaper to newspaper how much they all print, or the reporter who is reading the log what they can print. But some will go and take every word of it and write it. Others will just write portions of it. Or they'll take the information and write a story from it. But it depends on the reporter who is getting the information, what they want to do with it. But there was an incident, I noticed even this year, after being out of the police department, one of the carjacking incidents that are happening. We hadn't seen too much of it in this area from what I could see in the newspapers. I mean, in fact, there was not much of it happening at all. And then I believe it was the Boston Globe did an article on it, how it's happening in New Jersey and New York and other parts of the country, and all of a sudden we have a rash of it happening here.
In Concord?
Not in Concord, through the state.
I see.
The state itself, mostly in the greater Boston area, you see it happening all the time. Tewksbury, Chelmsford, Wilmington, Burlington, Boston. And prior to that, it just wasn't happening.
When you mentioned reporting from the log, many of us, of course, remember Bill Costello's own personalized column, which there was some morality as well as telling you what happened.
Well, Bill was a writer, and he had a flair for writing, and he used to make his column, and he would, sometimes he'd put names in there if it required it, but most times he'd just write a story, and it could be very humorous, it could be very message-giving, depending on what he wanted to give.
People clearly want protection in Concord, so you would probably find them very cooperative.
Concord is, is a town that has been very good to the police department over the years. They've been a very cooperative town as far as reporting crimes, being witnesses, being helpful to the police department. Police department, when you look at the size of a police department and the size of a town and how many men you have on the street in a given period, there was no way that they could cover the town and be at every place at once. And if the citizens, we didn't cooperate, it just would not be possible to keep the town in the condition it is and make it safe for people. And this is one of the problems they have in the cities. And people don't report crimes. They become adversaries of the police rather than working with the police. And I guess this is probably our adversarial system of law as it is anyway, the attorneys, courts, and police. But in a town like Concord, this is not necessarily so. The town and the community get along very well together, and the police department working with the schools, the town, and the citizenry.
Well, that's how it should be. Yeah. In your own career here, you began as a patrolman and then...
became a sergeant in 1962, and then became a detective and juvenile officer, and I'm not sure of the dates I gave you.
I have inspector in 1970, acting lieutenant.
In 1980.
So. And then by 1987 you were a lieutenant.
Lieutenant, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I retired as lieutenant on the police department. And
you retired in 1990?
1990, yeah. Been out for 2 years now. It'll be 2 years, 2 years this month. I've been retired.
And I see certain awards.
One of them, I was president of the Massachusetts Juvenile Officers, and the one plaque is acknowledgement of that. And the other plaque is the Roland Kinlock Memorial Award, which is given by the Mass Juvenile Association to somebody in the state, a police officer, it could be a judge, it could be a probation officer, somebody who has worked and given a lot of their life to working with young people. And it's a award I always kind of dreamed about, never thinking I would get it, and then I did receive it from the Juvenile Officer Association. And I'm very proud of that award.
Oh, you should be.
Yeah.
Looking at the police department and those in charge of it, there's been a relatively low turnover.
Very low turnover for the department size. There's been, going back in history, I'm not sure of all the history, but the first chief of police was Mr. Craig, and he was started in the 1920s, and I believe went into the early 1930s, where Chief Bill Ryan became the chief of police. His son is the present chief of the fire department today,
Dick
Ryan. Mm-hmm. And he was the chief of police until 1954 or 3, I believe. And then Bob Kelly became the chief of police. And Bob Kelly was the chief of police until 1957. And James Fining became the chief of police. And he was the chief of police until Bill Costello became chief in 1960, 8, I think it was, he became chief of police. And Bill, from Bill it went to Bob Lamont, to the present chief, Kyle Johnson. And the turnover has been relatively slim in the ranks of the men also. There's been a lot of long time. In fact, John Foster, who just retired this last past month, had over 30 years on the police department. I retired with 37. And Jim Ring, who is still there, he has 30 some years on. And there's a lot of officers down there with 20 years or better.
Is there a flexibility? You know, it seems like people within the same families have served either in the police or the fire department. Is there a mobility?
In the early days, mm-hmm. this was so. We seemed to have a lot of family members coming into the department. And the Finan brothers, there were two. When I came on the police department, there was Ned and Tom Finan. And they were brothers. And Tom was a sergeant when I came on. Ned was a patrolman, became sergeant. And then Tom retired. And Ned made sergeant and became chief of police. There was a Jim Hanley, who was a sergeant lieutenant. Paul Sweeney, who was a patrolman sergeant and lieutenant. Paul Landini, sergeant, who was a local boy. Martin Yaga, who was in town, was on Aspen Avenue, was a sergeant and detective, inspector. And Bob Lamont. And Bob Lamont, who grew up and was born in Lawrence, came to the town of Concord about the same time I did, in 1934 or 35. His father worked in the prison. He came on the police department in 1955, also shortly after I did. And he became sergeant, lieutenant, and chief of police for a short time before he retired. And in fact, Bob probably did one of the biggest jobs we ever had in the police department. He was the one that was primarily the planner for the 1975 bicentennial celebration for the town. He was the one that planned all of the law enforcement and security aspects of that celebration. And during that time period, we had 2 million visitors to the town that day. We had 2,000 police officers in the town that Bob had gone all over the state and recruited. We had police officers in Springfield, Worcester, Lowell, Waltham, Taunton, New Bedford, the Park Service Police from Washington, D.C. They were there with their horse-mounted police. They had their horses out stabled at Lockland Barn on Monument Street. And the whole thing, Bob started planning this 2 years prior to the celebration. And went and visited all these towns, all these departments, recruiting people to come to the town. And we used the old Rose Hawthorne School, which is the Welsh thing now, as headquarters during that time period. And everybody was dispatched and sent out from there. And it was a tremendous undertaking. There was no vehicles allowed in the town that day. From outside, the only vehicles in town belonged to townspeople. We had shut the town off. We had parking areas outside the town, bus people in. And an hour after the parade was over, most of the visitors were gone. They were bus backed out to their cars if they could find them. some were looking for them 4 or 5 days later. And there was one group of people that stayed and demonstrated after the parade down in the center of town, but the group of police officers from Concord and the state police dispatched them on their way. The state police had their canine dogs with them, and the demonstrators wanted nothing to do with them.
That's always an interesting challenge when you have a town like Concord which can operate most of the time like a smaller town, but because it's historical and it has a national draw, there are celebrity type of events that happen that create a mobilization.
Yeah, we've had a lot of celebrity events. Mm-hmm. We've had, especially to do with the private schools, Henry Kissinger has come into town. His daughter was a student at Concord Academy. President Kennedy's daughter was at Caroline. Caroline was at Concord Academy. Of course, when she was there, the Secret Service was with her, and they had an office in the police department.
Really?
And while they were there, this is where they headquartered themselves, and they were with her 24 hours a day. Of course, Caroline used to try to give them the slip she didn't want. Secret Service officers followed her all over the place, and but they did a pretty good job of keeping tabs on her. They were there 24 hours a day, 24-hour coverage.
So they had the office right in the police station?
Right in the police station, yeah. And whenever the president came to town, the Secret Service would come in, and they would do planning with us. When President Ford came during the bicentennial celebration, we came in and we had extensive, we had to alter a lot of the plans that we had made when the Secret Service came in to go along with what they wanted for President Ford. And when Jimmy Carter came through the town after his one of the elections for the town meeting in Clinton, we had to work with the Secret Service very closely. And when President Bush came up in this area after his sister died in Clinton, Lincoln, again, we all worked together, and the Secret Service committee and all the departments in the area worked together to protect the president while he was here in his motorcade. And they did the same thing when the Crown Prince Hirohito came over here to visit the Louise May Alcott House. Of course, this was supposed to have been, when we talked to the Secret Service again, they said this won't be released to the press until the day of the incident, when the Crown Prince was going to be here, and somehow it leaked out before then. And they were supposed to come out with their motorcade and be there very quickly and leave from the Alcott House. All of a sudden, the information was in the papers, and it was a lot different than it was supposed to be.
I remember a little over 2 years ago, Vice President Quayle had visited.
In fact, I have when President Kennedy was running for president, he came to the Concord Armory and gave a speech. And I was part of his protection at that time. I had the letter of commendation in my file from President Kennedy.
Isn't that nice?
And after he made president, and this was because of that period of time, we took him from there over to Hanscom Field, where he got on a plane and flew over.
But he was a real crowd getter.
Yeah, he was a real crowd getter. real. The crowds came to him.
Mm-hmm.
He was quite a man. And Senator Brooks used to come to town quite often when he was a state senator. This in them days, Concord was very much a Republican town. And today it's just the opposite. But the largest block of votes in the town in the early years were Republican. And today I would say it's Democrats with the independents second, and then the Republicans.
Certainly people do not realize all the preparation that
there's a tremendous amount of planning that goes into this. And you know, it's you talk about it like this and it sounds very casual, but it's not. It's days, hours, and paperwork, and making sure everybody is going to be there, and last minute glitches that come up to make a change. There's never any of these things that go off the way they're supposed to. There's always glitches, and these, you have to work through them and work around them. The 175th anniversary, 1950, I wasn't here. I was in the service at the time, I believe. But I guess they had President Eisenhower came here for that. I've heard, you know, officers talk about it. But I don't think they practiced so tight security that they did later on for other presidents.
Yeah, that would probably be in 52 when he.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, here we are the day before Bill Clinton is going to be inaugurated as president.
We're talking about presidents. Maybe Bill Clinton will come visit the town.
Well, at least you'll be able to view him more casually.
last year I was the marshal of the April 19th parade.
Oh, that must have been thrilling.
It was fun. I marched in the parade rather than protect it and stand beside it. It was the first time I've been able to do that in all the time that I was on the police department. Always been part of the crowd control of the parade over the years.
How did it feel?
It was a lot of fun. It was a nice thing. Very nice. I enjoyed it very much. I had a staff. I had Father Chip Pierce. John Pierce was a classmate of mine in high school. Bill McNally, Bob Lamont, and Tom Graham were my honorary staff during the parade. And they were all classmates of mine in school.
That's wonderful.
And it was a fun day.
Well, you deserved it. And I thank you. Mm-hmm.